Because they have another 5 minutes.
Hello, everyone.
Yeah, you're all everyone tonight. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen.
No, my name is Lynn. I'm a nicotine addict in recovery. And I'm so glad to be able to be here tonight. And nobody gets to celebrate their birthdays tonight, but I get to celebrate mine. I get to celebrate mine. I took my last puff of a cigarette on April 14th at 11:59 p.m. So my quit date was April 15th, tax day of 2005, which means that I have got, there's been no nicotine in my body for 9 years and 6 months. What's the date? Yeah, 6 months, I think it is. Plus change, but even as I speak, my time is, I always forget those. My time is building, because seconds add up into minutes, and minutes add up into hours, and hours add up into days, and days add up into months, 1 second at a time. I always say my time that way for a very, very special reason. First, I did it to be cute, to be different, okay? But then I found that I'm not all that different from people at Nicotine Anonymous, that we're all kind of the same. Is that better, Bob? You're going to have to let me know. Okay. I put it down in front of my mouth. Because I look back on my early quit when I came into the rooms here, and I stayed quit a craving at a time. And when I first put the nicotine down, it was like I was getting... Is it cutting in and out for everybody? Okay. Now I gotta get back to where I was. Okay, seemed like I was getting a craving, like every second that there was. And I would say when I would come to a meeting, I think I can make it through this craving, but I'm not going to say I can stay nicotine-free the rest of the day. But I can make it through this craving. So basically, I stayed nicotine-free a second at a time. So that ending there is real important, where the seconds add up to minutes, and the minutes add up to hours, and the hours add up to days, because staying nicotine-free just for that second was real important to me. Or it's what worked for me. Let's put it that way. It's what worked for me. When I got here, I had been 30 days nicotine-free because I had stopped. I had put the nicotine down. And then I looked for Nicotine Anonymous in my area, face-to-face meeting, only to find out there wasn't one. So my next step was to sit down at my computer, type into the search engine, Nicotine Anonymous. And I found, what's the name of the other group? Not Unlimited, the sister group of us. We're Voices of Nicotine, unofficial. Thank you, Calico. Unofficial. I found them first, and they had a bunch of people listed as sponsors and everything over there, and they had their emails listed and their names and telephone numbers. That was it. They had telephone numbers listed. So I called this one person, this one woman, and told her who I was, and what I wanted to do was to stop smoking, and I didn't know how to join the rooms or anything. So she came online, and she showed me how to join Unofficial, and how she brought me over and showed me how to join Voices of Nicotine Recovery. That's when we had our meetings at Yahoo. And she told me what time the meetings were and what I had to do to get invited. Yahoo, we were invited into a meeting. And she told me what I had to do to get invited into a meeting. In fact, she came on to the next meeting and invited me in, so I'd be sure and get in. Once I was invited in just the first time, I was always invited in after that, automatically. And I was amazed, absolutely amazed, Because when I got here, I knew, number one, I knew that nicotine was a drug. And I knew that because I was having withdrawal symptoms. And I never had withdrawal symptoms from anything except the drug. Well, I've never taken drugs. I've had problems with alcohol. And I had cravings and withdrawal symptoms when I put the alcohol down. So I knew that this was a drug. I knew that this was a drug when I got here. And I knew that I was powerless over it. How did I know that? Because I couldn't leave it down. I always picked it up. I would have a 3-month quit. I'd have a 10-day quit. I'd have a 3-week quit. No matter how long my quit was, the longest I ever had was 3 weeks or 3 months, I would always pick up. That 3 months, I remember when I picked that up, when I picked up at that time, I thought, and I truly believed this, and I really honestly believed that this is what I would do. I went out and I bought not a carton of cigarettes, but a pack of cigarettes. And I thought, I'll smoke this. I didn't try to just smoke one cigarette because I knew for me there was no such thing as one cigarette. I thought, but what I can do is buy a pack, and I can smoke a pack, and then that'll be it. It'll have satisfied that need that I have inside myself for a cigarette. And then once that pack is done, I'll just be done, and I'll stop again. I mean, I'd stop before, at the beginning of that 3 months, so there's no reason why I couldn't stop again, right? Wrong. I couldn't. I didn't. Once I started smoking again, there was never even a hint of a question of stopping again. I again was a smoker. Just like when I first started smoking, my girlfriend and I that were chums in high school and then throughout our lives, when we took our first cigarette together, there was no question then, and that was in our high school years, there was never a question of, oh my gosh, look what we did. Or should we continue smoking? We took that first cigarette and we were smokers. There was no question about it. And I'm old enough that I could go to the store, the little country store, and I could buy a cigarette without any problem. Just gonna have to fix my head. I mean, I could go and buy a cigarette, and nobody argued. And then if there was ever a question, I'd just say I was buying them from my mom, because I smoked the same kind of cigarettes my mother did. That way I could conveniently borrow a pack. In other words, I could conveniently steal a pack, which meant at age 14, I was a thief. In fact, at age 9, I was a thief because I remember stealing dad money from my stepdad once, just once. But he caught me. Well, I know I stole it more often than steal it to go to the show. So that makeup was in me. That makeup to be a thief was in me. And they say kids will be kids. I don't believe that. All kids don't steal. I stole money to go to the show. Well, they gave me money to go to the show. I stole an extra quarter to buy candy and stuff like that. So that was an ingrown thing in me. That was a defect of mine right before I ever did anything. But anyway, where was I? I don't even know where I was. Oh, buying cigarettes. That's what I was doing. So my mother says to me, after I get to be about 16, she said, she sat me down and she had to talk with me about alcohol and cigarettes. She said, you're getting to be an age when people are going to be asking you to either drink or smoke. She said, I would prefer you didn't. But if you feel you must smoke, please do it in front of me. She gave me a perfect excuse to smoke in front of her. Because, yeah, I was smoking. Not every day. At that time, if something had happened that for some reason I wanted to quit smoking, I could have quit. Because I was just smoking once in a while here and there. But she gave me the perfect excuse to smoke in front of her. Which meant that then I smoked more often, and therefore I smoked more at one time. Because you see now, it was okay, I could smoke. So I did that. I still hid my drinking. You know, I didn't drink all that much. Well, you know, at 14 or 16, you know, that sounds so stupid to me when I say that now. I didn't drink that much. Or I didn't smoke that much at 16. For a 16-year-old to smoke and drink anything is unheard of, although it's prevalent today so much. Do I wish I'd never taken that for a cigarette? Oh, yes, I do wish I'd never taken that cigarette. But anyway, I continued to smoke, and I continued to smoke, and I got here to Nicotine Anonymous. Now, that's the important thing. Now, before I got here to Nicotine Anonymous, you know, doctors were telling me, you know, I should quit, because if I didn't, I'd get emphysema. Well, now, haven't we all heard about that 90 or 99-year-old man or woman that has smoked all their life and nothing has ever happened? I mean, they're healthy and wealthy at the same time, and cigarettes have never caused them a health problem of any kind whatsoever. Has anybody here, you know, type on the screen if you've ever heard of that person. I had heard of that person. Bob's heard of that person. And I'm sure that a lot of us have heard of that. Lisa's heard of that person. I'm sure that everybody in this room has heard of that person that smoked until they were 90, 99, and never had a health problem from cigarettes. Well, I was going to be that woman that smoked until they were 90, 99, and not have a health problem. I was not going to get emphysema. Period. I was going to be healthy. So I continued to smoke. I did get lung cancer, however. I did get lung cancer, however, in 2002. And the doctors did tell me that I had 6 years to live, a year to live. And on the way home, now we all have different belief systems, okay? But these happen to be my belief systems. And I'm not trying to force them on the room or anything. But on the way home from the doctor's office, with the tears streaking down my face, I've only got 6 months to a year to live, I started thinking of what happens when we die. Well, I know what will happen to me. I believe I know what will happen to me when I die. And I thought to myself, you know, I could hack living in a world of perfect justice, or in a world of perfect love, or perfect harmony. That would be really neat. So by the time I'd gotten home, I had accepted the fact that I was going to die, and that, hey, it wouldn't be all that bad. It wouldn't be all that bad compared to living on Earth, putting up with all the human beings on Earth. And financially, also financially. So then it became a question to me to how am I going to get there from 6 months to a year financially. That was my main concern. How am I going to get there financially? So I know that I'm jumping around here. I spent time, I'm a budget person. I would always write down what my income was, what my expenses were. And I would cut my expenses to make my income. I'm a numbers person. And I would go by my budget. Well, when a person gets cancer, you can't. It's kind of hard to do that because your expenses change monthly. And I can remember probably about the third or fourth month into treatment, after every month having to change that budget. I remember sitting in my recliner here and just taking the steno pad that I had that I kept track of all my stuff and just throwing it up in the air and saying, screw it. Everything has always turned out in my life. It has always worked out, and it probably will now. And I've never kept a budget since then. And everything has always worked out. I've always had the money for the rent, the groceries, the medicine, the rest and relaxation. When I did drive, I always had the money for the car, for my insurance, for gas. I never have been without. I've never been rich. I've never been wealthy. I've just had what I needed, okay? And sometimes more than I needed. So anyway, back to coming into Nicotine Anonymous. Now, as you all, I don't know if I mentioned that, but I belong to our parent program of Alcoholics Anonymous. So when I came here, there were some things that I knew. I knew that there would be literature that I would need to buy. I knew I would need to get a sponsor because that is what a 12-step program does. It's about, they have literature for that program, a sponsor for that program. All I needed to do was to find somebody that by listening to you, listening to people in the rooms, that I could tell was nicotine-free and was living the steps in their life. And I could tell that because when I listen to somebody talk and everything is going okay every single day, every hour on the hour, I know that there's something wrong or that person is not being honest. Because you see, life is not like that. And this program is not like that. And we as human beings are not like that. We live this program, but we have to get from one place to another. It's like when our higher power closes one door, he always opens another. But when we're in that hallway in between, it's pure hell. And when we're in that hell, we need to grab onto our sponsors. Our sponsors aren't available, we need to grab on to another recovery nicotine addict. Okay? But while we're there, things aren't good. And I found somebody like that. That when life threw them a curve, they reached out for help. And they talked about their problems. They have what I call, you hear me call it in the meetings that I lead, a sore toe. I heard them talk about their sore toes. And I heard them talk about it, and then pretty soon they weren't talking about their sore toe anymore. They were talking about recovery. They didn't say, well, I did third the step, and then I did this step, and then I did that step. They all of a sudden were talking about just every day and how the sun was coming out and the flowers were blue. And that's the way this program acts. When we live these steps, we do these steps automatically. They're part of our lives. They're part of my life anyway. I can't speak for everybody else. So I found a sponsor. Her name was Roz. She's no longer with us, and I miss her dreadfully. We were the same age, so there were a lot of things physically that we could relate with, as well as in recovery. The first few times that I called my sponsor, she'd say to me, well, number one, she said to me, yeah, I'll be your sponsor. You don't seem too needy. Well, that just went right to my ego. Oh, well, you could be. I don't need any help at all. I'm pretty well. And my ego just went, That's why I say it when I lead a meeting. Don't thank me for leading the meeting. I'm lucky I'm able to lead this meeting. I'm fortunate that you people let me lead this meeting. I don't need to be thanked for it. My ego's too big as it is. I don't need all these pints to make it even bigger. It's a pleasure for me to lead these meetings. And then she said, I bring a problem to her. Like she was going to solve it or something. And I knew better than that. And she'd say, well, you just need to talk to your higher power. Because I know. And finally, after she said that about the first time, I said, well, what do I need you for? She says, I'll be here when you figure out what you need me for. Because, you see, I know that I am powerless over nicotine. I knew that my life was unmanageable. And how I knew that it was unmanageable, well, it's one number one I kept picking up. And once I started smoking, that was the unmanageability, was the way I was buying my cigarettes online so that I wouldn't have to pay the state tax. I had no intention on declaring them on my state tax form when I filed all my taxes. I still owe my state for that use tax. I'm still trying to figure out how to make it okay with them. I'm not going to call them up and say, I owe you this for it, and have them haul me away to jail or something. I still haven't figured this out, but I will one of these days. I had a long time. The second step, the first three steps are like process steps. They're not something that I do. I've had to think on the second step a whole long time, where we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Because for me, when I came into this program, being returned to sanity was simply not using nicotine. And I really didn't know if I could be returned to sanity in that area. Because I had smoked for 49 years. And I often said that I smoked a pack a day, but I would say that I smoked two packs a day. You can take any addict. I've often figured I can take any addict that I'm talking to, and when they tell me how much they smoke, I can usually double that, and that's closer to the truth. Because that's how I talk. And we addicts aren't too different. And I said I smoke a pack and a half a day, so I probably smoke two and a half packs a day. So as time went on, and now I'm still not picking up. And what I used when I first came to this program, well, I had used it for years in our parent program. It was a short version of the Serenity Prayer. And every time I got a craving, I said the short version of the Serenity Prayer. And that's what worked for me. When I got these cravings, I got the craving for a cigarette, but I didn't want to smoke. Yes, I had the craving, and the craving wanted me to fulfill that with a cigarette, but I didn't want to smoke. I did not want to become a smoker, because you see, right now, even at that first day, I was a non-smoker. And I didn't want to change that. Because now this was 2005. Yeah, it was 2005. In the year 2006, on my first year anniversary, smoker anniversary, I was in the hospital having carotid artery on the same side that I'd already had carotid artery surgery on. And what was that due to? That was due to smoking. Doctors had told me since 1994 to stay away from secondhand smoke. And what was I doing until 2005? Not only was I smoking, I was then re-inhaling the secondhand smoke, my own smoke. And what that does is the smoke that goes up in your carotid arteries, let's see if I can explain it the way the doctors told me, because it took a long time to think through. The smoke, as it goes up through your carotid arteries, it carries the platelets that the cholesterol sticks to. And it's the cholesterol that's going up through here that would stick to that, that would make your carotid artery bulge or get or pack up, and then you'd have to have the surgery. So I had to have it done twice on my left side. It was 2006, 2007. I was in the hospital, an unrelated incident. Somebody shoved me. And I broke a bone. I'm still having trouble with that because bones do not heal as fast as they do on a smoking. Now, true, I wasn't smoking. But remember, I had smoked for 49 years. I do believe that if I had not stopped in 2005, I wouldn't be walking today. But because I stopped in 2005, I'm walking today. In 2008, I had to have, and I'm not trying to put this down, I'm trying to point something out and then point out the good part of it. In 2008, I had a stent put in my artery to my heart. You know, has anybody here ever been to the doctor and they say that nicotine constricts the valves and the arteries? If you have, type it on the screen. If even one person has heard that from the doctor, that you are, Bob, you've heard that. Okay, so then I'm sure that other people have heard that. They took a picture of the arteries on my left side before they did the operation, and then they took a picture after they did put the stent in there. And my God, that artery on my left side where they had to put the stent in, it was pencil thin. It's a wonder. I mean, there was no, what do I want to say? There was no air getting to my heart at all through that. Why was that happening? Because I smoked for 49 years. But what happened? They put a stent in. And I'm still alive, and I'm still getting air to my heart through that, and that's the good part. And why am I still nicotine-free? Because I came to Nicotine Anonymous. I got a sponsor. I follow the steps, and I go to meetings. And I have a higher power that removed that obsession eventually. It was not easy. It hurt like hell. The pain, the cravings were not fun, but I did not want to smoke, and I was willing to go to any length. And I mean any length. I would have done anything. Not to pick up. That's 2008. 2009, guess what happened? I go into my oncologist, and she's ready to discharge me from nursing. She says, you don't have to come back anymore. I said, great. And then she says, she's asking me a bunch of questions. She says, you don't cough at all, do you? And I said, well, yeah, I do have a persistent cough. Which I did. I ended up having lung surgery. No, I want to tell you, I have spoken about this in meetings. Anybody out here who is still smoking, has any problems with your lungs whatsoever, or even if you don't have problems with your lungs, you do not want to take a chance of getting lung cancer, because you do not want to have lung surgery. It is the most painful thing that I've had lots of surgeries in my life. It is the most painful surgery that I have ever had, where they have to go in, they have to go into your rib cage, and right all around in there, they go in through, where do they go in? Through the front? I think they go in through the front, I'm not sure what. Yeah, they go in through the front, and that's where all your nerves are. And I have talked to many, many, many people that have had lung surgery, and I am the only one out of all those people that I've talked to that doesn't have nerve damage, that isn't still on medication controlling the pain. Now, I consider myself so blessed, so fortunate, that I had the doctor that I had. Susie Cream Cheese, that used to come to the meetings here, She and I used to talk quite a bit on the phone. And I remember talking to her and saying, Susie, just please, please pray for me because I just really don't like this surgeon. She said, Lynn, I'm going to pray for the surgeon, not for you. And I got to tell you, she did an awesome job praying for that surgeon. Because a lot of the people I talked to had that same doctor for the same surgery. And 10 years later, they're still in pain. I'm not and never was. And I called her the other night and I told her, I haven't talked to her in a number of years. And I said, you know, Susan, you really did a good job in praying. But believe me, do not take a chance with your life. Because once you've got lung problems, you're going to have heart problems. If you don't have heart problems, if you don't have lung problems, and you get heart problems, you will have lung problems. It's just a known fact. And this is all brought about by nicotine. This is why nicotine is such a deadly, deadly killer. Like, nicotine itself doesn't kill. I'm sure everybody's heard that somewhere in the meeting. But what it does is it constricts the arteries to the heart. The heart doesn't get oxygen, and if they don't catch it in time, you die from lack of oxygen. You have a heart attack. And sometimes it's a major one. Sometimes you get a cancer, and sometimes there's a cancer that's called a small cell cancer, and it's a deadly, deadly cancer. It's one of the fastest deadly cancers there is. And if you think I'm trying to scare you, it's because I am. This is where anybody who is still smoking is headed for. If you are still smoking. If you are still smoking, chances are you will get emphysema. I do have emphysema, by the way. You know, I was going to be that woman that lived from 90 years old to 99, and I'm not have any health problems. I have a lot of health problems. But I do know this. If I had not stopped smoking in 2005, I do not believe I would be sitting here talking to you today, tonight. I am alive only because I stopped smoking. Only because I went to my higher power and I asked for his help. Because I knew I couldn't do it on my own. I had tried so many times. How many of us have tried to stop over and over and over and over? And it wasn't until I turned my will and my life over to his care. And for me, that meant a lot, stressing over to his care, because you see, I was given a brain, and I was expected to use it. That meant that if I had a craving, I couldn't just sit here in my chair and say, God, please remove it. Time after time after time. There were things that I could do. I could read the recovery literature. I could go to a meeting if there was one on. I could polish my fingernails. I could take a shower. I could go for a walk. I can read a book. I can watch TV. I can eat. I can, if it's dinner time or lunch time, I can eat. Or I can prepare food for dinner. I can clean my house. I can vacuum my rug. I can scrub my kitchen floor. I can do my dishes rather than pick up a cigarette. And I may have to do that stuff all over again. I've got windows out here that I can clean. I have Venetian blinds that I can dust. There are so many things that I can do rather than pick up a cigarette. Now, when it gets to the point that I am right on edge and there's nothing else that I can do, God will do for me what I cannot do for myself. And God has done that. I mean, I don't know. I mean, he did. And this is how he did that. When I put down the nicotine this time, And I came in my apartment door that day before I put it down, and I thought, I mean, I'm reaching in my coat pockets for my cigarettes and pulling them out, and I'm reaching in for my lighter, and this thought goes through my mind. It's time to put the nicotine down. Now, if that had been my thought and me thinking it, I would have thought it's time to put the cigarette down, because that's how I think. But I didn't think anything about that at the time. But I looked at my pack of cigarettes. I had three quarters of a pack of cigarettes left. I'm not about to throw them away. I know now. I know that I could have gone and wet them and broken them up and everything. But at that time, I was bound and determined I was going to finish that pack of cigarettes and do it before midnight that night. And I smoked fast and I smoked furious, but at 11:59 on April 14th, I stubbed that last cigarette out. And I was going someplace at this point, and I don't know where. Oh, I know, in that first 30 days. I knew that I had quit several times before. And so I thought to myself, again, what can I do that I've never done before? And again, this thought goes through my mind, and these are the exact words. You have never gone to Nicotine Anonymous. Not, I have never gone to Nicotine Anonymous, but you have never gone to Nicotine Anonymous. God was doing for me what I could not do for myself. Putting thoughts in my head. Because I answered that thought, I said, you know, you're right, I haven't. And that's when I started looking for Nicotine Anonymous. And that's when I found Nicotine Anonymous and followed that through with, like I told you before, going to Unofficial and getting somebody, you know, calling their phone number and getting into the meeting here. That's what God has done for me. And I will never, ever deny that. But because this is a 12-step program, and other than right now at this talk, when I'm in a meeting, I always refer to my higher power or a power greater than ourselves. Because I would not want to scare somebody away with the dog of God. Our life is too important. And this is such a simple program. You know, when I took my fourth step, you know, I took several fourth steps here in Nicotine Anonymous, where I took the questions, the second part of the questions is reserved for the fourth step in the Burgundy book, Nicotine Anonymous, the book. I took a history. I wrote a history. And then I went back and I took a fourth step according to the way AA had shown me to take it. You know, I've taken so many fourth steps, it's ridiculous. And I've come up with the same character defects on each and every one of them. I am a self-centered, prideful, angry, fearful, I am also a loving, caring, friendly person. And I've also found out with our other steps that God is going to be the one that's going to remove my shortcomings. Doesn't say in His time, doesn't say in my time. I don't know how He does it. I do know this. The more loving I become, and by loving, I mean caring. And for me, it's caring for other people. And but I'll be very honest with you. The people that are in my life today are Spark Chaser, Harry, Bob, Ellie, Kevin, Day Hiker, Lisa, Hot Boy, Sparky, Mary Beth, Cynthia, Peaches, Dave, Tracy, Craig, and Abby Normal. Those are the people that are in my life today. And you are the people that I care for more and more and more. the more I see you, the more I listen to you, the more I care for you. The more I care for you, the less my anger is. The more I reach out to you, the less self-centered I become. The less prideful I am. The one thing that I know for sure is that I am not the same person today that I was when I entered Nicotine Anonymous. In 2013 when I broke my ankles and was gone for like 3 months on end, I had some very, very strong spiritual experiences. I got some infections in my ankles, which kept me there for so long, but if those infections hadn't happened, I wouldn't have been there for those spiritual experiences to happen. I'm closer today than I have ever been to God as I understand Him. And I am only there because I stopped smoking. 2005. I come to meetings. I reach out when I can. I make enemies because I mean what I say and I say what I mean. And that makes enemies sometimes. I'm a very blunt person. I'm learning not to be so blunt. But sometimes I'm just blunt. And that's who I am. My name is Lynn. I am a blunt nicotine addict in recovery. And thank you so much for letting me share tonight. Thank you, and go ahead.